serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 91-year-old Joan Patron of Bakersfield, California, originally from Long Island, New York, an accomplished dancer, actress, instructor, someone who's carried out so many roles in the entertainment industry, and as you've heard, also someone who feels strongly that the use of nuclear weapons should be avoided at all costs. Witnessing the devastation of Hiroshima as an 18-year-old is something that she would later pinpoint as the source of post-traumatic stress disorder. This has been a different kind of conversation today from what we usually hear on Hometown Heroes, but it certainly underscores the reality that World War II was a period that altered not just the course of our nation and the world, but the lives of everyone who survived it. Let's learn a little more about where Joan's journey headed after the war. She was in the very first musical production of Guys and Dolls, and over time kept adding more and more acting to her dancing.
I became an actress, and in California, I appeared on the Perry Mason Show and gave the best performance that I ever experienced. You know, I knew that I was giving a very good performance and that I was now in a series that a star had taken a role in, not in the same episode that I was in, but Bette Davis was also invited to do Perry Mason series. So I was, my self-esteem went up a little bit, and I thought, oh boy, this is terrific. And I'm on my way to becoming maybe a good actress, and I could make a living at it. You know, that was supposed to be a step up. And then they invited me back for a second. Then when I arrived in California, I went through the same thing that the Me Too Weinstein thing went, so I quit. I couldn't go to the next level because I simply couldn't do what they asked me to do.
Well, and hats off to you for having the willpower and the character to withstand that pressure. You mentioned a name there, Marlon Brando.
Oh, yes.
And I understand he wanted to serve in the Army in World War II but had a football injury and they ruled him 4F, so he never could. But how did you come to know the guy who everybody does an impersonation of? Do you have a Marlon Brando impersonation, by the way?
No, I don't. But I do. I had a 50-year friendship with him. He saw me in a New York reporter who had a column, introduced me to him. As I came out, I met this reporter. As I came out, he introduced me to Marlon. And I don't know whether he asked to meet me because he saw the show and he liked me. There were so many women. I don't know what happened. But he said, oh, you know, hi, Tony. This is Marlon. Marlon, this is Tony. And Marlon put up his, the first thing he did was look at me. He put up his fists. So evidently his impression was that I was a little toughy. So I was a mime. I still am a mime. You know, I have mime skills. So I put up my fists in a position of a lightweight fighter. And I felt funny. I thought, how stupid this is. But it's playful. And I thought, he's different. Isn't that interesting? You know, well, we ended up dating. I didn't know that he had a few mistresses going on at the time. He was very secretive. We had a wonderful relationship. It was very friendly and understanding. We had both had pretty tough childhoods. So there was an understanding and a friendship, and our sense of humor would sometimes blend because of that. Because we had a lot in common because our childhoods were... my father was an alcoholic, but we didn't know that he was. And his mother was an alcoholic. And he thought that I was a good actress. And I think he wanted me on his side for some reason. I don't know. Among women, we were called conduits to his talent. Like he would plug into certain aspects of our personality and also what we had accomplished in, you know, oh, you were in Guys and Dolls? Oh, really? So he became, you know, before you know it, he's in Guys and Dolls, the movie. And he had a mistress that was in Tahiti, and he had children with her. He ended up doing Mutiny on the Bounty. So these women became somehow conduits for his projects. I don't know how that is done. I mean, you know, is it done in a laboratory? How do you take a woman and then say, oh, you were in that? Well, I'm going to do the movie of that. Was it a conquering thing? Was it a competitive thing? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Oh, you were in A Mutiny on the Bounty with Clark Gable? I'm going to do the movie now. I'm going to do a rerun of it. He was a very gifted actor. Mm-hmm. So he would mesmerize people personally in the movies. He was fabulous. He was a phenomenon of nature. He was gifted with a great skill. He could imitate anything. And he would utilize that ability to absorb the essence of somebody and then incorporate it into his performance. I mean, you would see a different costume, maybe playing Napoleon, but he might be doing some other actor's voice. He would listen to it for hours and then imitate Claude Rains for Napoleon. This is what he did. He did things like, and that was very specific. You know, his mother had been an actress. As a child, he was raised watching the plays, the summer stock plays, and he was like a father to me at times that I didn't have. And so he put me in his pocket. So over a 50-year period, that was an on and off again friendship. And when he needed me, he would call me.
Here's one question about Brando. And I guess if he could take on anyone's personality and impersonate anyone, then he couldn't be offended that people are always going around saying I could have been a contender or, oh, you know, all the Godfather quotes, right?
Oh, I told him that that's what they were going to do. He asked me to come to see his movie, Streetcar Named Desire. He invited me and wanted to know. Well, I was so overwhelmed with his performance. He was sitting right next to me and I said, oh, who just hit him? What? Why did they hit him? He's sitting right here, and I'm talking about him. I felt so foolish. But anyway, out after that, he said, what did you think of my performance? You wanted my opinion. Yeah. I was overwhelmed. I thought, I have an opinion that's important to this genius? So I said, well, I don't think you're going to get an award for this one, which he didn't. I said, but it was powerful. But you are a character lead actor, which is very unusual. And I said, your performance was fantastic. I said, you know what's going to happen? People are going to imitate you all the time, like they do James Cagney and the way they imitate Bela Lugosi, or how they imitate, you know, or any Clark Abel. They're going to do that. They're going to imitate you.
And they still are.
And they still are. And I said, it was fantastic. But I did predict that he would not win the award then, but he would in the future win. I knew that he would win.
And I know you worked closely with him for decades. You had a relationship with him, yes, and all those things. A lot has been said and written about him. Is there anything that you think people should know about who he really was, maybe that they wouldn't expect?
Well, first of all, I would say that he was a genius in his field, and that I don't think he knew that he was a genius. He was a phenomenon of nature, is what I think. He was a genius, but his personal life, his film life and his personal life were like night and day. He was very funny. I mean, you know, you'd fall on the floor laughing. But sometimes his jokes were kind of, you know, off color. To me, he was he could be remembered as conscientious about the underdog. He wanted to always protect and help the underdog, or people that were being abused. He would pick up and fight for them, you know, if he thought the American Indian, he was there. You know, he had me do research on the American Indians. But one thing that he didn't have were parental skills, because he didn't have them. His father didn't have, his mother didn't have. There was nothing for him either. His frame of reference about how to raise a family was, there wasn't anything there. He had to just guess.
Time has gone by fast on us, and I want to get some comments from your daughter, but I did see a photo here from just a couple years ago. You had a little reunion with the USO and got to hang out with some current day USO performers.
Yeah.
What was that like for you? I mean, that's 70 years later.
I was very impressed. They were so talented. The singing and the farcical comments in their dance character, the dancing had changed. They were doing character acting in their dancing. The chorus had improved. In other words, it had been raised to a different level. You had to really know how to sing, how to dance, how to create a character. So they were very talented.
And did you feel honored to be recognized that way?
Well, I wasn't dancing. I was just introducing them and saying how wonderful they were.
Well, and the reason they wanted you there is because you did what they did 70 years ago.
Yeah, I know. I didn't want to tell them because I thought, well, they're going to crunch the numbers and find out how old I am. Oh, gosh, you know, okay. I think that I'm still childish at times, very childish. That's not to my advantage.
Well, it's not to any of our advantage, but I think we all deal with that from time to time. I just have two more questions for you. One of them, what are you most proud of?
That I managed to get through hell and back. Wasn't easy. I don't know why I'm crying. See, I can't even tell you. You touched me with that question. What am I proud of? And I did everything I could to be a good person. And I dared to take the inner journey to find out what I did with my life, or what I had to do with my life. And I had made decisions that didn't turn out right. But I can forgive myself, because you can't be responsible for somebody who you are not anymore, because you are always new. So I'm proud that I learn how to accept the truth, because the truth is my best friend. That is what carries me. I have a beautiful daughter. She has a wonderful sense of humor. She has a heart of gold. She can be feisty, just like everybody else, and she can be demanding at times. So am I. So are you. So everybody becomes demanding. Or she can be very understanding, very loving, very thoughtful.
And it was her daughter Anna's thought, her idea, to let me know about Joan and her experience and bring that unique perspective to you on the radio today. So I'm trusting that Anna can bring this Mother's Day edition of Hometown Heroes to a fitting conclusion.
Oh, I love my mom. She's a survivor. She's creative and always strives for good, even though she's had, you know, a tough life. A lot of people don't really understand PTSD. And it's been difficult, but, you know, she got through it. And out of that came some very important, I don't know the word, but like standing up for like her work with the NOW organization, and still striving to be creative and have a family, even though she had a lot of pain and struggled with some demons. And it actually got her closer to God, because she's a spiritual seeker. I think taking a civilian and putting them in a war situation is beyond comprehension. And, you know, they've learned about PTSD and how it really affects people their whole life. I know she's proud to have been in the USO, and that she does love the United States, but she doesn't like war. And there's a big difference. To understand that, I think, is important. But yeah, she's been quite a mom. It's been a lot of fun. And she doesn't look 91, and you know, big proponent of nutrition and health and vitamins. But yeah, we love this country, and we appreciate everything that you do to tell the stories, because there's a lot of them, and it's all good. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And you know, with regard to what she was doing in the USO, and I know you've heard a lot of the stories of a lot of the veterans that talked to me on this show or that went through what they did in World War II. To know that your mom was over there dancing for them and entertaining them and giving them a sense of the life that they couldn't get back to because they were stuck overseas, does that give you a sense of pride or connection to what your mom was doing back there?
Yeah, actually, you know, it takes a lot of guts to come from a small farm town and try to get $300 a month to help support your family, and then just plunk yourself on a cargo boat and go on a six-month tour, 2 months in Mannheim, Germany, 2 months in Le Havre, France, and Hiroshima. And she was actually in the first entertainment civilian troop to go to Hiroshima. And we had done some research with the Hiroshima Memorial Peace Museum, and that was verified by the director. And she had submitted her plea for peace, which is the story about the bell, for the 70th anniversary of the bombing. And what most people don't know is that Hiroshima is actually built on the bodies of the dead from that experience. They actually detonated the bomb midair. It never really hit the ground, but it was the shockwave that blasted the city. And the Japanese didn't even know what was happening either, because the Japanese military held it as a secret. They knew that the second wave of bombers were coming, and they didn't inform the civilians. They could have evacuated, and they didn't, and they lost 80,000 people. So, I mean, it's a difficult subject, because there's two sides to the story. The good news is that we have peace, and I think really what my mom is a proponent of peace, seeking peace, and that's really what we want. And also, no more nuclear bombs. It's just too much. It will destroy the planet, and we don't want that. We just want to learn to love, and I think that's what my mom means when she says, you know, against evil, which is hate. Let's just sit down and talk about it. Yeah, and then from there we launch into Hollywood, and that's a whole other story. So, so
which one is more destructive?
it's all had perspective, right? So we do come from a long line of military enthusiasts. My uncle was Joseph Patron. He was a master sergeant. He developed the braking system for planes on the aircraft carrier so they didn't go off the end of the boat. My aunt Lucille and my cousin Barbara both worked in the military for Rockwell, I think it was. And my uncle Rocco Patron was the director of the Marshall Flight Center and the NASA Apollo program. So we are a very very committed pro-American military family, but you know, there's another side to that too. And so it was nice to talk about that today too, because the PTSD that my mother has suffered and that my father suffered when he was in Korea has really had difficulties on us kids having to navigate caring for parents who lose it sometimes and hold it together. But it's still the greatest country in the world, and I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. And I have been to Japan. I did go to Japan, and it was a healing experience for me to be there. So yeah, let's just all love each other, especially on Mother's Day. I love my mom.
That's Anna Bird talking about her mother, Joan Patron, who, yes, really is 91. And remember when we introduced her, what she said her ultimate response is when people doubt that age? She said she dances the Charleston. And yes, we do have the video evidence of just how light on her feet she is at 91 on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page and at hometownheroesradio.com. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there, including my mom, Linda, a one-time Army nurse. That's our program for today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.